Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Jordan from SleekLens.com, and welcome to the newest episode of the Sleek Lens Photography Podcast. This one is all about your photography questions. If you follow us on the Sleek Lens members group page, you can do that, but it's a private group, so it's pretty much meant for anybody who has purchased any one of our products in the past. They can join this members group, this kind of exclusive group on Facebook, and they can post their photos, they can post questions, all kinds of stuff there. And for this particular post, I asked those on the members group club page if they had any photography questions. And if they did, I will feature them on the podcast. So I had a lot of people that actually emailed in their questions. So I wanted to go ahead and go over five of the questions right now. I don't want to make this too long of an episode, so I'm probably going to split some of them up because I still have questions coming in even as I'm recording this podcast. So let's go ahead and get into the questions and see what everybody had to ask about photography in general. So the first question is from Kent Harrison, and they asked, how can I achieve a bokeh effect in my background photos using a regular lens? So I'm assuming what Kent means about that is how do I get a really blurry background, have my subject stand out as much as possible using a lens that's not like an f2.8 or f1.8 or something like that. You actually still can achieve this effect, but it won't be as dramatic, as you were if you were to buy a lens that was an f2.8 or f1.8, so a very large aperture opening. So the way you basically achieve this effect is you have to basically zoom in as much as possible. You can back up from your subject to get a better composition, but zoom in as much as possible on whatever lens that you have, however far that will allow you to zoom in. And also lower your aperture as low as it can go. So basically go to, if you have a variable aperture lens, most likely it's at f4 or f3.5, somewhere around there. Go down as low as you can. And when you zoom in, if you back up from your subject, zoom in and then, and use that lower aperture, you still can get a bokeh effect in your background. It won't be as dramatic as you would see in a really nice portrait lens that has a very wide open aperture, but it's still going to get you that kind of effect. And you can also play with it a little bit in post to try to help get that effect a little bit more. But that's basically how you do it. You just have to basically zoom in. You're probably not going to be able to get that effect if you were still like at 18 millimeters or so and still trying to get that effect there. The key really is to zoom in as much as possible, and that'll get you the kind of similar effect for that bokeh background. Okay, so let's go into the next question. So the next question is from a Laura W. Smith, and her question says, I just got my very first drone, and I was wondering if there are any apps to show me where I can legally fly. So basically, for those who don't know, who are not familiar with drones at all, there's a lot of different laws, and it varies by country to country. I can kind of only talk about the laws in the U.S., because I don't know any other country's laws about that. But there are a few apps out there that can actually help you. So if you were to go to a location, you can open the app and it'll tell you whether it's safe to fly in a particular location. I used to use one called Hover, and I think I've talked about that on the podcast before. But that will show a map, and it'll show where you are on the map, and it'll show a circle that's outlined where inside that circle you can't fly. That is either near an airport, near a restricted area, near a military zone, something like that. But there is another app that I've actually started using, and I find it way more helpful than Hover. Hover was basically for people who are considered recreational flyers. So people who are not doing it for money or anything like that, they're just purely trying to fly it just to fly it. But the AirMap app is the one I'm using now, which is called AirMap, and it's available for iOS, Android, and it's even a web app as well. That AirMap app will actually show you two different classifications. So if you are a recreational flyer, you can toggle on that you're a recreational flyer, and it will basically show you where you can and cannot fly in a certain zone, just kind of like the Hover app. However, if you are a certified certified flyer, you can actually toggle that on saying that you're a certified, legally contracted flyer. You're doing it for money. You've passed the required tests and all this kind of stuff to take to be a commercial flyer. If you toggle that on, then you can see where you can fly if you're commercially available to fly. I'm actually taking my test soon about being totally personally liable for everything when it comes to drones. So I'll be a commercial flyer. So that app is actually very, very helpful because you do have a lot of different places that certain groups of people can fly. Typically, if you're flying for recreational purposes, you can actually not fly in as many places as you would be able to if you are a commercial pilot that's taken all the regulations and all that kind of stuff. So again, the AirMap app is a really great app that I use, and it gives a couple different things. You can actually see if there's a, like, if it shows a caution zone, that means that you're probably like near a school or something like that. Doesn't mean that you can't fly there, but it wants you to be cautious of where you're flying. So if it's, for example, like a school again, that might be, depending on when you're flying, that might be kind of a populated area. So you might want to just be cautious and stay away from that as much as possible, stuff like that. So it's a really good app. Again, the app is called AirMap. Okay, so let's go on to the third question. And the third question is from Michael Teeks, T-I-C-K-S, I believe that's how you say it. Michael says, I have a Canon T5i that I bought used as a backup video camera. I noticed that it usually quits recording after 9 to 10 minutes of recording. Do you know why? Yes, this is kind of a typical thing when it comes to those kind of crop sensor cameras. Not all of them, but especially I have a Canon T3i that I use to record video, and it's basically the same thing. Your camera's sensor, from what I've understood, your camera sensor is becoming overheated, so it'll shut down around 9 to 10 minutes. So it'll shut down between there. And sometimes it might go a little longer, sometimes it might go a little shorter, but pretty much they all automatically shut off recording between 9 to 10 minutes. Sometimes it might go 8 minutes, but for the most part, 9 to 10 minutes. And it really doesn't matter whether you have a really high speed card, so a nice class 10 card that is really, really fast and has a lot of storage. It really doesn't matter what kind of card you have, to record to. It's an effect in the camera that you can't really get rid of unless you have like an Atomos or something, which is a separate device that you would have to buy to record. Now, there is a workaround for this, and for those of you who decide to do this workaround, you're kind of putting your camera at risk if you want to do it. I've actually done it to mine, so I will say that it worked on mine very well. But for those of you who want to install a different firmware that is not the Canon firmware, it will give you an option to toggle off and on whether you want it to automatically start up recording after it automatically quits recording. So basically what it's going to do is once your camera detects that it stopped recording, it'll automatically start recording again. And there might be around a 3-second, 4-second gap in between those two clips, but it will continue to record as long as the card doesn't get full. So for those of you who actually want to do this to your camera and give it a shot, again, you're doing it at your own risk. It's a program, or it's a free firmware, basically add-on to certain Canon EOS cameras called Magic Lantern. You might have heard of that before, but if you haven't, you can go to magiclantern.fm. And that will take you to their site, and you can read more about it there. You can download it for free, and it'll give you instructions on how to do it to your specific camera for free. But I've actually done it with mine. And so right now, if I were to start recording me doing a video of this podcast, probably about 3 minutes ago or so, it would have stopped recording, but then would automatically picked back up. And it would, I probably have again a 3 or 4 second gap, but it would still keep recording and recording and recording as long as my card is not full. Again, there's no real quick way around that, but if you are okay with doing that to your camera, that is definitely a way to go to help that without having to buy a separate device to help with that effect. Okay. So the next question is from an Angie Consworth. It says, I have found that my photos seem to be blurry, even if I'm using a small aperture. How do I correct this? So basically, if you're saying a small aperture, I'm assuming the way, because the verbiage can be, some people say different things when it comes to aperture. So I'm assuming when you say a small aperture, you're meaning an F20, F22, F18, somewhere around there. It kind of depends on your camera and whether your shutter speed is low. So first of all, if your shutter speed is too low for the amount of light coming in, obviously your camera is going to get blurry photos. That's just a given. No matter what camera you have, if your shutter speed is really low, so if it's, maybe if you're trying to handhold a shot and you're at F22, which is cutting out a lot of light, if you're trying to handhold a shot, let's just give it random a number here. Your shutter speed is at 1/20th of a second. You're going to have to hold your hands extremely still to get that photo very sharp. So if you have all of that done and all that's correct, then most likely, depending on what kind of camera you have, maybe you have a full frame camera, full frame sensor. And if that's the case, typically full frame sensors cannot really, even if you go up to F22, just can't get the right amount of sharpness from all the way from the foreground to the very, very far background and infinite. You know, it can't really get that sharpness. So you might hear a lot of people say that they're doing focus stacking, which basically means taking photos at different spots in the image and combining all of those in Photoshop to get a perfectly balanced, focused, sharp image. One example would be if you were photographing a cave, like you're trying to frame a shot with a cave around it, but in the very, very, very background, there's a lighthouse, you know, way, way, way out there. If you were to focus on the cave to get the nice textures and the details of the cave, then you probably would get a nice image of the cave, but then the background would be not as sharp. It'd be kind of blurry. Whereas if you focus on the lighthouse, you would probably get a very not so sharp cave. So what would people do in that situation? They would probably focus on the cave, take a photo, and then focus on the lighthouse in the background without moving the camera. So hopefully it's on a tripod. You would take a picture of the lighthouse and balance that exposure to whatever situation it is. And then in Photoshop, you would basically just take away the blurry cave or something like that and just combine those two photos together. That's one way of doing focus stacking. There's a whole ton of ways to do focus stacking, but that's one way to do it in one simple example. So it really just depends, Angie. I would probably need a little bit more clarification on the type of blurriness, you know, what camera you're using and stuff like that. But that's kind of a general example. So just check those things and see if any of those pertain to you. Okay, so the last one is from Neil S. And Neil says, very simply, I like his question very simply, what are the best settings to photograph the moon? Well, first of all, let me just kind of talk about a myth when it comes to photographing the moon. People think when you go to photograph the moon that, you know, since it's night outside, you have to, you know, crank up your ISO, make sure that your aperture is very low. You know, if it needs to be as low as it can go, like F3.5, F4, somewhere around there. And your shutter speed needs to be a little long, all because of it being very, very dark. That's kind of the opposite of photographing the moon. So when you want to go to photograph a moon, let's say you have a full moon outside and you zoom into the moon with your really long telephoto lens, and let's say it's on auto. Let's just start from there. You put it, your camera in complete auto mode. What it will probably do is detect that it's a very bright source. And depending on what kind of metering mode and everything like that, you'll probably take a photo and number one, it's probably going to be noisy. And in the middle of your photo where the moon's supposed to be, it's just a big white circle. That's all it is. And the reason is because the moon is extremely, extremely bright. Think of pointing your camera at a light bulb. That's kind of what I kind of picture it to. Even if you have the light bulb in the dark, you know, if you have a light bulb in a completely dark room and you go take a photo, you don't need to compensate for the dark room because it's just going to be black. So what you would need to do is actually kind of go the opposite of what most people think when photographing the moon. You probably need a lower ISO, so you don't need to go all the way up to 1600, 3200, somewhere around there. If I'm photographing the moon, I'm probably sticking around 200, 400, somewhere around there. Probably around closer to 200 if I can get it. And then a very decent aperture, so maybe try f8. And then you would do a shutter speed of maybe 1/250th of a second or something around those lines. One thing you can do to make sure you get a perfectly nice image of the moon is to change your metering mode to a spot metering. And what that's going to do is that very center focus point that's in the very center of your camera when you're looking through the viewfinder, that's what it's going to meter off of. So if you go into aperture priority, set your camera to f8, set your ISO to, let's just go 400 for this example, but set those two settings and then point at the moon and let it meter in spot metering off of that one point where you're looking directly at the moon. You're probably going to see that your shutter speed is going to be very, very high. It's way higher than you thought it was going to be. And that's one way to tell that same example is to see what it's metering off of. So you really just what I'm basically trying to say is you don't have to, just because it's night outside doesn't mean you have to compensate like you would for taking a traditional night landscape photo. So basically just check your metering mode, change it to spot metering, and then point at the moon and see what settings your camera gives you from then on. So again, thank you, Neil, for that question. All right, guys, that is basically the photography Q&A for this episode. Thank you for those. Again, I'm going to read your names off here. Thank you to those who submitted the question. Kent Harrison, Laura W. Smith. We have a Michael Teeks, an Angie Consworth, and a Neil S. Thank you for those who submitted the questions. If you want to hear your question on the Sleek Lens Photography Podcast, email them to Jordan, J-O-R-D-A-N, at sleeklens.com, and I'll make sure to put them in the next Q&A episode that we have. I don't know when that exactly that's going to be, but as soon as I get a whole lot of my questions in, I'll probably break it up into a couple different episodes. So I just want to say thank you guys for joining me in this episode, and I'll see you guys on sleeklens.com.